Recorded live at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
This is Carl Kennedy from The Rods, and I give you the right to rock.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, they rust when they sweat. It's Genghis and Ragman.
This is Carl Kennedy from The Lodge, and you're listening to those two crazy bastards, Genghis and Ragman. Horns up!
Alright guys, you're on live with Ragman, Mono e Mono, and we're both in cars, and we're both doing an interview, but we're talking to a legendary drummer, Carl Kennedy from The Rods, legendary metal band from the early 80s, that resurged in the 2000s, so we're going to get into a lot of that and more, especially about this brand new record that they have that's out now, Brotherhood of Metal. Carl, welcome back to The Right to Rock.
Hey, thank you, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. Well, we discussed a little bit ago, I mean, it's been about 4 years, so it's going to be a good time to catch up today. But I got a lot of questions, but I guess first, let's take us back to 2011. You had Vengeance. You guys had done some dates around that, and I guess continue to do dates. But it took 11 years to get Brotherhood of Metal. What did you guys do in between? Or, I mean, is this... You know, you do it when you got gigs, or are you constantly writing, or how's it work within the Rods?
Yeah, it is that we had, I think it was released in 2011, so it's been like 7 or 8 years. And we were playing several years prior to that. I know sometimes it's misquoted as being, you know, that late, but we had gotten together basically because a good friend of ours, Al Falso, had passed away, and we were asked to play some songs in honor of Al, the other musicians. He owned a music store. It was so helpful to everyone. So, after the Vengeance album, we really didn't have a record label. David did two solo albums. I did a solo album. I did quite a bit of producing. And time just goes by. You know, we don't live that close to each other. and we had no record deal. So then, and then of course, when we did sign with SPV Steve Hammer, we'd wanted to work with Ollie, and you know, he had wanted to work with us. So, but from the time we signed, it was still a couple of years, another 2 years before we got this album out. It was just one thing after the other, you know, and it took time, even though it didn't take time to record, but we wanted it to be a good album. And then, just got a little bit bogged down in the recording process because of everyone's lives. So that's where we are now. And that's why it took so long. So in hindsight for us, it really wasn't that long because we were busy through, you know, all of us were busy during that time. But, I would have loved to have had another Rods album out, halfway through this period of time of 7 years.
Yeah, you know, that was my mistake on the dates. I was reading. I didn't have my notes in front of me, but yeah, 2008, you guys got back together, and then 2011, Vengeance, like you said, came out. So yeah, I was kind of curious if have you guys been just doing like festival dates and probably not a full tour, or have y'all talked about doing tour?
You know, we haven't done a full tour since the Dio Disciples tour, which was, you know, 30-some dates that we did. And, you know, that was great. That was a lot of fun. But Niji was a new label, and their press machine was not dialed in like this press machine is.
Yeah.
So, you know, but nonetheless, it was a great time. We loved Disciples. In fact, David just did 3 shows, wrapped up last night with Dio Disciples with the Hologram Tour.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so he played, did 3 shows. I think he was doing the Encore Neon Nights. And I've seen some video from it, and I've spoken to him about it. And you know, it looks and sounds like it was just a great time. And he was. We call him the right. Gary and I call him the right Reverend Rock, because he is just like, he takes people to church. He's like the metal preacher when he's on stage. And he did the same thing with Disciples. You know, he's playing along. But the next thing you know, he jumps off the stage. He's in the front of the crowd. He's like, you know, that's him.
Oh, that's
White
pretty
River
wild.
Rock.
Uh-huh. What were his thoughts on the Hologram? There's a lot of mixed emotions between Dio fans on that. And being that, you know, they were cousins, and him and Ronnie had worked together in Elf, I kind of wonder if it was kind of surreal looking back, seeing this Hologram. I mean, I don't know what it's like seeing live, but it had to be kind of weird, I would think, you know?
You know, you'd have to speak to Rock about it. You know, he's spoken to me about it, but I think it's really his call to speak about it. But I know that, for one thing, that they can't see it. On the side of the stage, you can't see the Hologram. So when he was on stage with Ronnie, I don't believe he could look over and it would be as if Ronnie were on stage, or he were on stage with Ronnie.
Oh, gotcha.
So, you know, from that perspective, I don't think it was quite the same. I know my perspective on it is that I've been ambivalent. I've had mixed emotions. On one hand, I think, you know, let sleeping dogs lie, you know, like Ronnie's past was a phenomenal musician. And I was fortunate enough to work with him. They sang a song that I had written, and to witness him performing the 2 songs he did for the Rods right before he died. Never worked with a musician like Ronnie. He's such a great person. And just an amazing talent. So on one hand, it's, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe this should just be left. On the other hand, there's the issue of keeping the music alive. Ronnie's music was incredible. And it's not that people wouldn't still find the music, but finding it in a different way. You know, they're actually able to experience something they maybe weren't alive for, and something that maybe they never got a chance to see. I mean, it's the same band. It's just Ronnie and Graham, but it's, you know, so I'm ambivalent. You know, I have mixed emotions about it. They're doing it very well. They're not doing it for profit. This is not a moneymaker by any means, but it does keep the music alive.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen. I know Zappa has one. I mean, this is going to be, you know, this is the cutting edge technology. And the only thing I can say on is that I really am excited that they're working out the kinks, because the Carl Kennedy Hologram is going to kick ass.
Nice. Nice. I like it. Yeah, there's always a good means to an end there, right? So, yeah, they're probably
that's
out there,
right,
filming you every night, making sure they get all the moves.
No, working. That's right. Work the kinks out. because I want my shit to really be great. I want my holograph to really kick ass.
Oh, yeah. I hear you, man. Well, no, that was interesting perspective, because I'm kind of the same mold. I got the chance. I was fortunate enough to see Ronnie a lot when he was alive with, mm-hmm. you know, Dio and Sabbath and Heaven and Hell. So to me, it was like when it first came out, it's like it was kind of sacrilege. But then you kind of go back, yes. and look at, well, for the people that weren't able to witness it, or I mean, even like I think they've tried one with Freddie Mercury. I could have probably seen Queen back in the day, but by the time I got my shit together, so to speak, I just never pulled the trigger on a ticket, which I kick myself every day. But I mean,
I feel the same way, because I never saw them live, and I was thinking when I saw the movie, I thought, why didn't I see these guys live? They're incredible.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? When I was growing up, because I'm 51, I'm not sure what your age is, mm-hmm. but, you know, Queen.
Way older.
But, you know, Queen, I miss kind of the 70s heyday a little bit. I got into mm-hmm. real heavier rock, 78, 80, and then never turned back. So Queen was kind of tinkering with the disco sound and tweaking mm-hmm. their sound quite a bit to where you got turned off a little bit here and there with what they were doing, but having seen that show with the original band would have, I'm sure, just been incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, let's
get, you know, I was going to say, and I saw Ronnie from early on with Elf when it was high school dances and everybody that's at a high school dance, but not when Elf played. When the Elves played, the Electric Elves, they literally, everybody sat, and it was a concert.
Awesome.
And then I rehearsed in a house, one of the first bands, I think it was 19, first professional band, and we rehearsed in this Finnish garage, and Elf rehearsed in the house, because the bass player and Doug Thaler were, you know, rented that house. So I would see those guys all the time and get to hear them, and so that whole thing is part of my DNA as well, because I was a big fan before Rock and I started talking about starting a band together. So it was a little weird for me too when, you know, hearing this is going to be put up on stage, but hey, at least it keeps the music alive. So
agreed. And with the state of rock where it is, kind of anything we can do like that to get people out and go see live music, you know, the better, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was kind of curious, just before we jump in the new record, you know, the Rods had kind of a short stint at first, about 6 years. Before you guys mm-hmm. called it quits, but now since you guys have reunited, which is not full on, you guys got other stuff going on, you've been back for about 11 years, so actually, since you've reunited, actually longer than the first stint. Do you ever kind of regret in 86 pulling the plug, or is it, I know it opened up opportunities for you, especially with producing and stuff, but do you regret any of that? Like, oh crap, I kind of wish we would have got it, kept it going, and, you know, here we would have been on our, you know, 40th anniversary or close to it.
I don't believe Gary or David feel that way either, because what happened was, I think if we have regrets, it was that we didn't have good management, because after the tour with Iron Maiden, AC/DC asked us to tour.
Wow.
To go back and tour Europe with them. And it was huge. It would have been a huge opportunity for us. The problem was that it was a buy-on situation, and Arista UK paid for half, but Arista US would not. And that's mostly because I think that they had Aretha Franklin and Air Supply. And Air Supply, I don't know if you remember them at the time. I actually didn't attend a concert of Air Supply. I just wanted to go on record saying that.
That makes two of us.
Not that I don't like Air Supply. I have never gone to a concert, never purchased a ticket. Even at my advanced years, I don't know that I would purchase a ticket for Air Supply. However, they got these big glowing rocks as part of their stage show. They're very expensive, and they're glowing rocks, like little crystals in these big rocks on stage. And apparently that's what Arista spent their money on instead of sending us back to Europe. So it was a little bit disappointing, even though the rocks were beautiful. That was disappointing to us. And so at that point, we really were winding down. I convinced the guys to dump our manager. It took them a while to get on with it, because you know, he was coming to me. Rainbow asked me to audition. AC/DC asked me to audition. Crocus asked me to join the band. Danny Joe Brown, they asked me to join them. And our manager was like, don't tell the guys, don't tell the guys. And when we did the show at the Calderon with Metallica and Vandenberg, that was when he told me that AC/DC was talking about having me audition. And don't tell the guys, don't tell the guys. We're like, listen, this guy's a jackass. This is our manager, and he's trying to pull me out of the band and doesn't care about the band, doesn't care about you guys.
Yeah.
And really, he doesn't care about me. So, but what happened was we started winding down. Once we had no management, things were just winding down. Nobody's taking up the cause. Like Rod Smallwood was there with Iron Maiden when we were on tour, and he just photographed everything, and everything he lived and breathed was Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Nonstop. And, you know, if you don't have someone like that, it's very difficult. So, there was nothing acrimonious with the band. We just wound down. David bought a restaurant. Gary started touring with Savoy Brown. I started producing. And we weren't getting gigs. So that's how it just sort of morphed into 1 year turned into two and two to three. And we were raising our kids. So all of that was, you know, just simply just as a result of, you know, some decisions made and management not being particularly creative at the time.
Yeah, and what a different dynamic now, to where if those opportunities were afforded you now, you're like, hell yeah, because we're going to take 6 months off. You know, we had several guys playing several different projects, but back then in the 80s, that was kind of unheard of. It was like taboo if you were going to go play with somebody else. Yeah.
Right. It was like, oh, you're playing with someone else. That means that group is done. Like there's something bad happening within the group. And the side projects really didn't start to happen, excuse me, until Seattle and those things, you know, where suddenly everybody was playing with everybody else and all those bands were supporting each other. And, you know, made a huge difference. But you're right, back then it was not heard of. I had a friend who almost, Shmulik Abigail, who really felt strongly because I had done Shmulik's album a few years ago. And, he just said to me one day, I just have to get another drummer because you won't come and rehearse, you know, three times a week and you're in another band. Your loyalties will always be with the Rods. I'm like, you know, please, I can certainly do both. But he's like, no, he's very old school. And so the drummer he got, when he told the drummer they couldn't be in other projects, they almost got into a fist fight. Because
oh, jeez.
Yeah, because he was saying that, you know, that's like you're a traitor. I was like, I'm not a traitor. So it was definitely an old school way of looking at things. And so today, if that were the case, it wouldn't even be an issue.
Was
that. But no regrets. You know, I don't think any of us have any regrets. I think we're happy that we're where we are now. I think just the fact that we've been together since David and I started in late 79. And here we are. We're still good friends. We're still making some decent music. And still strong on stage, and we didn't wimp out. So, hey, good as it gets for us, you know. Still the Rods. We're not reinventing the wheel by any means, but we're playing what we love.
And that's what we like, man. And let's get into the new record, Brotherhood of Metal. I like the title. I got to tell you, I instantly thought of something, one of your contemporaries, Manowar, since they do the whole Brothers of Metal thing. And actually, the title track, I kind of get that vibe a little bit, and then it goes full on Rods. And I got to say something about this record before we jump into a bunch of tracks, is there's a lot of memorable choruses to where, even if you don't know the song after a time or two listening to it, you can't help but start singing, which is definitely a start of a pretty positive for a good record. But let me ask you, what was the thought about Brotherhood of Metal? Was there kind of writing the song? Was there a concept of, hey, let's bring the brothers, let's have a big anthem, so, you know, if we're playing a festival, just get everybody into it, a la, you know, kind of like a Manowar, you know, where they're all into, you know, some of the bigger anthems and stuff like that. And like I said, it doesn't really sound like Manowar, but I just kind of got that vibe because that's what they preach a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's and I don't think it's, for me, I don't want to say it's derivative or influence, but, you know, being the first drummer in Manowar, I certainly have a certain DNA being with them at the concept of, you know, conceptualization of the genesis of Manowar. You know, there's certainly something there that, you know, carries with me. But the way I came to this, when I had written some lyrics and I gave them to David, is this concept of brotherhood of metal. And it came to me from over a period of time. When we first started, there's so many great young drummers who study differently than I did. When I was studying, I was watching Ed Sullivan, and I would see a band who was on for a minute, 45 seconds, or 2 minutes. And during that period of time, I would have to wait for the snaps, the little shots of the drummer, to look for how they played, what gear they had, and glean every piece of knowledge I could from that. Just because otherwise you'd never see them. It's not like today where now you have so many tutorials. So the drummers today, the young drummers, are starting out with great technique, great, I don't want to say tricks, but technique that allows you to play, really bring it up to speed pretty quickly if you're diligent about rehearsing. I was concerned, and one of my friends said, you know what, you got your own style. All you have to do is just play what you play. Don't worry about anything else. So I'm like, okay, you're right. I should just do what I do, and if it's good, it's good. If it's not, you know, okay. So then we started doing festivals, and I would see drummers, and they would be amazing, and I would be complimentary of them. But they would also be very complimentary of me. Wow, man, that was like a clinic. I love the way you play. It's so different. And so there was this camaraderie within the drumming community. And then I started seeing it more and more with bands. And I think Muscle Rock for me in Sweden really solidified that concept in my mind. We were headlining, and Crazy World of Arthur Brown was a special guest unannounced. We had no idea who that was, but it was the Crazy World of Arthur Brown. So Arthur Brown comes out, and he has a dancer. And as a matter of fact, she had something to hold. She used my stick. She asked me to borrow my sticks to hold up her little costume, which was like an angel or something. And she had it. So he had a dancer just kind of flitting around the stage. And he came out, and of course he's older now. He's a 60s guy, so he was quite elderly at the time. And you know, he was much older than most of the bands on the bill. Older than us, you know, quite a bit older than we were. And he came out, and the crowd loved him. They loved him, you know, and they accepted him. And his music was not heavy metal. It was just really cool. And it's when I realized that, you know, the heavy metal audience is, you know, as long as you're bringing real music, you're not just coming out as, I hate to say poser, but as a poser, and just, you know, trying to strike poses and be cute and, you know, play kind of crappy stuff you don't believe in. As long as you're genuine, the fans are into it. And so that's how I came up with the idea of the brotherhood of metal, and that's how, and I was thinking about, you know, there is kind of that bond in all metal people. If you like metal, there's so many genres and subgenres now, but if you like one, odds are good there'll be something, you'll find some common denominator in all of it, that there'll be something you like and or respect someone who likes that music. So anyway, that was kind of how I came about it, and also because I wanted to have a song that the crowd would sing back to us. So that was as simple as that. I gave the lyrics to David, and he knocked it out of the park musically.
Nice. Killer track, man. A great way to start the record. Another track I wanted to bring up, you mentioned Rainbow. And this one, to me, kind of has a Rainbow vibe, is Smoke on the Horizon. You got a cool story about how that song came together, and am I on par with my thoughts there?
No, I think so. I mean, I think you hear, with the addition of the organ,
yeah,
bringing a Deep Purple rainbow kind of element to it. And of course, David toured with Deep Purple for a year with Elf. And so they were on the road constantly with Deep Purple. And, you know, John Lord was a big influence on all the solos, Deep Purple, you know, Deep Purple with me, Deep Purple with everybody. We love Deep Purple. So the addition of the organ certainly takes a track that might have some a familiar riff. When you're adding the organ, now you're really kind of, you know, reminiscent, you know, for someone who's a Deep Purple fan. So, and with that, you know, David had written that song, so that I really can't speak to that particular track.
Oh, it's a killer song, man, and I really like the vibe of it. I think that, for me, I guess the track on there that kind of throws a curveball, but it's really catchy, is Party All Night. And I want to preface that. Yeah, I want to preface that by saying, you know, I kind of consider the Rods a meat and potatoes heavy metal band. You're gonna get a good metal record, good riffs, good melodies, and some metal in your face. Party All Night, and I really like the track. It's almost more of a modern sounding type song for me.
David and Gary are both drummers, so they both started. In fact, David started playing drums with Ronnie, so before he went to guitar. So David came up with that. I literally played exactly what he asked me to play. Now, one beat of that is mine, one drum stroke of that is mine. Everything was just what he had. He had the whole idea in his head, and that's what it came out as. And it's so offbeat, it's so not the Rods. And yet it is kind of the Rods, you know.
Yeah.
Everything on this album we can perform live, so that's the cool thing about the album for me.
But I thought the riff was almost kind of had a modern sounding riff, mm-hmm. which was pretty cool. I was like, wow, I dig this, man.
Gary plays some crazy bass lines in it.
Yeah.
Kind of funky and heavy at the same time. So, yeah, I mean, it's an unusual song, and you know, the guys in their local guys here for me in Scranton, Carbondale area, and they have a podcast called Potter Than Hell, which is a very cool podcast, and these mm-hmm. guys are so into music, and so I had played them the album before we sequenced it, just to get an idea. So now I played it for them, and they all took notes, and it was a big listening party. So David and I were trying to sequence the album, and I said, let me ask these guys, because I had written their notes down. So I asked them. So I contacted Steve Wright and the guys, and they actually came back with a sequence order. And so we're going through it, and I give it to David, and we're going through it, and he goes, you know what? I can't come up with a better sequence order. Like, neither can I. And so that's what so the guys from Potter Than Hell, Steve Wright and Brian and Ryan and Dylan, those guys came up with the sequence order for the album.
Oh, nice. And,
yeah, pretty crazy. I have to credit them with that, because it was 100% them, and we just couldn't top it. And so, you know, but it was cool that they did it. It was cool to have it sequenced by guys. And they came up with the idea for Party All Night is kind of like the midway point, kind of like that little, you know, cleansing cracker, you know, before you get on with the second half of the album.
Well, I mean, for me as a listener and a fan, it's all about variety. So if you're mixing it up, especially, I think track listing is so crucial for an album, to where you got to keep the listener interested. So if you could kind of mix it up, definitely. I mean, I love it when I'm like, God, what am I going to hear next? You know, that type of attitude when I'm listening to a record. And I got that with your record too. And again, like I said, it's so damn catchy, a lot of the choruses and stuff, to where you may not know the verses, but by the time you're done with that song, you're definitely singing that chorus along with you guys. So it's really cool. The last track I wanted to bring up, and it had a similarity in a way for me of Brotherhood and Metal, of something that I really picked out. The track I want to talk to you about is Evil in Me, and I meant to mention this at Brotherhood and Metal, is there's these heavy parts that's, I guess, right before the solo and stuff, and I got to say, those are so awesome. I just crank them up, especially on the title track. That one part is just so heavy, and you're just crushing it on the drums. And then there's a similar type section in Evil in Me like that too, which I really dig. So I wanted to compliment you on both those. I like that element, to where it kind of changes things up a little bit and just gets really heavy, and you just want to start banging your head.
Had wanted to, they put Evil in Me last, and they were torn about 1982, because 1982 seems to be the track that's getting a lot of attention across the board, fans and, you know, reviews. And so they wanted to have it like closer to the beginning of the album. And, you know, they talked to me about it, and I said, yeah, that, you know, look, I'm really glad you guys love that song so much. And I also had a discussion about Evil in Me, in that I felt that Evil in Me was just one of the strongest tracks on the album. And, you know, so having it last, but we talked about the sequence. Like, I really like what you're talking about. I've always liked that if it's an album, then it should be listened to in its entirety in the sequence order. You know, let it unfold as such, rather than just kind of pulling tracks here, there, and you know, making it sort of a random pick and choose. It's part of the whole album. That's why you made that album, as opposed to a single or an EP. So I think Evil in Me is such a great track, but I think it was, you know, they had a really good point. It closes the album, you know, the way it starts.
Yeah, very strong high note starting. and a very high note ending, and a lot of high notes in between. Very solid record, man. Congratulations.
No, thank you so much. We really appreciate that. And, you know, we're glad that it's being as well received as it is, because, you know, old guys doing old music, you know, it's great. It's great that people are into it.
Well, you know, and the thing that inspires me as a fan, you know, like a guy like yourself, you've been doing it for a long time. For being in the business as long as you have, you know, say going on 40 years plus, you know, to put out solid music today in the environment we're sitting in musically, dude, my hat's off to you, man. It's awesome. It's like you said, you can tell if a guy's going through the motions. You guys definitely are. It's like, it's for the love of the music, and you just want to put out a good, solid product. And that's so awesome, man.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I think at this point, Doc, like, there would be no point in trying to be who we aren't, you know, trying to chase a trend. And I always give that advice to young musicians. You know, if you're chasing a trend, you're always going to be behind the curve, so you'll never be anything current. You just need to be yourself. And, you know, if you believe in the music, hopefully you're going to find a fan base who also believes in it. But, you know, chasing a trend is a big waste of time, and it would have been a bigger waste of time for us, because we're just not, if we tried to come out and do a very modern type of metal that wasn't us, I think we would have failed, and I think we would have been, you know, criticized for it heavily, and deservedly so.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, Carl, what's next for you guys? Are you guys going to try to do some dates this summer, or any possibility of maybe a few U.S. dates, or do you have anything in the works like that?
And we're in talks with doing some U.S. dates. We did have a couple of European dates for this year, but we let them go because as the album was going on and we were trying to finish it, we were really unsure about, you know, what was going to happen time-wise, and we didn't want to be backed up against, because it's the age-old, you're trying to play live dates and you have a commitment, you're trying to finish a record, and the two don't always go hand-in-hand, and then you're going to compromise one or the other. So we decided to not do that. And I wish we hadn't, because we had finished in time and we could have. But at the time, we made the decision. It was the right decision to make. So hopefully we'll be able to announce some U.S. dates soon. And then we're discussing some dates for next year for Europe. So I think they will start to come in as well as the ones that we're discussing right now.
That's awesome. So, yeah, just to touch on one thing you just said, and just get, I guess I know your take, but I find it interesting in the, you know, the musicians that we talk to, that some guys like to work on something, go tour, go back and revisit it, tweak it. But I always think of, especially if you're in a groove and you're really feeling it, man, get everything you can when you're feeling it, rather than going back and tweaking and, you know, taking forever to get something out. I think if you're in the groove,
I agree, and that's the digital thing, that it allows you to do that. You can come back 2 years later. But usually, if you've been playing it on the road, it's going to morph into something. But your original idea, a lot of times, is the best idea. Not that changing it live isn't good, and it brings a fresh... But overall, you're not really, a lot of times, coming back to a better place with it when you know, if you played it live. So, you know, we found that works best for us, and then, you know, so we just stuck to it. But back, you know, I wanted to say one thing. We have, David and I always write a lot of material, but I have two albums. I've been recording an album with the band St. James in Miami, which we're now just wrapping up. We probably have a few more weeks of tracking before we can mix. And then I have a brand new Kennedy album, which is a project. It's a band. And so that project is actually done now. We're just about to ship it off. Chris Collier is going to mix three songs for us, and then I'm going to hunt down a label to put this out on. But, you know, that's done as well. So I got these two projects. I just played drums on a single for an Italian artist. And my band Colocus is still recording. I've been doing tracks for them, for that band. And, you know, played a couple tracks on the new John Hahn solo album, which is fantastic. Just great music. He's evolved so much. I don't know if you're familiar with John Hahn, but he's amazing.
No, I'm not. Is he a metal guy, a rock guy, or?
you know, he was a Mike Varney discovery.
Oh, okay.
And so he's a shredder. He's a, you know, he's in the tradition of a Steve Vai, Joe Satriani. It's instrumental music, but it's just some amazing compositions. So I was honored to be asked to play on that album. So, and that, you know, a couple of other things as well. So, you know, we're all staying busy.
That's awesome. I find it so interesting, too, that a lot of the guys that have been around a long time, I don't know if you know Ron Keel, but it seems like you guys are so much busier now than you were back in the day. It's amazing all the projects everybody's doing. I know it's harder to make a buck, but I think a lot of it, and I know in Ron's case from what he shared with us, is just he loves being busy and loves doing everything he's doing.
He's doing a great job. I mean, he's killing it. And, you know, I love seeing what he's doing. And I do think that's true. I think there's a, I think the people who, the musicians who are in it because they love music are just out there as hard as ever. It's not about the money. It's about the passion of playing. And you see that with guys like Ron.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, Carl, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
I always say this, and, since we've reunited, and that's that we love meeting fans. And so at live gigs, don't be afraid to approach us. As I know, as it stands now, we have no plans to start charging for a meet and greet, which I see is very common now. And I understand that it's difficult to make money, so bands will, you know, do a meet and greet for a certain fee, but we're not doing that at the moment. So I always encourage the fans to come and meet us, come seek us out. I mean, we're friendly guys and we love meeting people, and we actually have, when we go to Europe, a number of friends we've met over the years who actually come and hang. And, you know, so it's been great. Been great meeting the fans. So if you're out at a show and you want to say hi, please do.
Well, Carl, we want to thank you for coming back on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. And we want to tell all the fans to grab the Rod's brand new record, Brotherhood of Metal, out now on SPV. Carl, it was great talking to you again, man.
Same here. Thanks so much for the support.
No problem, Carl. Take care, and if your tour makes it through Houston, Texas, I'll be up there front row center, brother.
Excellent. We'll go get barbecue, because as the guys at Hellstar told me, everything in Texas is barbecue. You have a wedding, you don't have a reception, you have a barbecue. So we'll hang, and we'll have a barbecue.
Dude, we will do that. I don't know if you drink beer, but I'll buy you a beer, too.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, Carl. Take care, man.
Thank you. Take care.
Held high, a legion strong as steel, truth without a lie. All countries, no boundaries, we march hand in hand with the sound of thunder and power as we stand. Many have tried. We rise like the phoenix, metal gods at our side. Loud and proud, we stand uncurled. One nation, all for one, united around the world.
Ragman, and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.